Well, good afternoon. Lock the doors. This is the dog sex talk. So obviously, we just had a talk about ovulation timing and figuring out the fertile window and making recommendations for when to do breedings with very, you know, high levels of expectation of success with conception and delivery. But there's another part to this, and that may be that you may need to help with some form of breeding assistance or artificial insemination. And I think that many veterinarians are adverse to doing AIs, even more so than they're adverse to doing ovulation timing. So again, this is a huge area where technicians are absolutely able to contribute expertise to a reproductive practice. So my plan is to go through some examples of how we do semen collection and semen evaluation and artificial insemination, but I'm not going to bore you with a million details about the physiology of sperm production and that sort of thing. It's not really relevant. So why do we want to even deal with breeders and have a reproductive practice in your small animal practice? This may be the first hurdle you have with your vet when you're trying to convince them that we should do more repro. Well, some of the problems are that, you know, breeder clients do need a lot of hand-holding. They can be very demanding, very onerous clients that have a million questions and have been on the internet and have a lot of their own answers that you have to re-educate them. But again, this is an area technicians can really be stars, because if you understand the physiology and the reasons behind what we're telling people to do and take the time to explain it to them, most breeders say, okay, I understand. Again, most veterinarians are too busy to do repro or enjoy doing repro unless they're very comfortable with it. Many of them didn't pay a whole lot of attention during the repro classes in vet school, and so they're uncomfortable with it because they don't remember the physiology and the endocrinology, and they never in their life have collected a stud dog. So they don't really want to mess with it, but they might be perfectly happy if you can provide the technical aspects of it. And certainly in my practice, I work both at the university and in a private referral practice, I met with a lot of negativity about, well, you know, we're contributing to the world's dog overpopulation problem. Why are we doing repro? But with time, the staff has learned that the clients that we are cultivating and helping are clients that have really great dogs. And yes, there are a lot of really great mixed breed dogs, but there are also for people who want a dog that they can go hunt with, or want a dog to lead the blind, or want a dog that, you know, is going to be able to be carried around all the time and be a nice dog, they may need to get a purebred dog. And in order to get healthy purebred dogs, we need to offer reproductive veterinary services. And not only that, it's fun. It's much more fun to make puppies than to deal with death and dying all the time. Okay, well, first thing technicians need to do is learn breeder speak. How many of you guys are in the dog fancy, like raised dogs or show dogs? So you guys are probably familiar with most of these terms. Believe me, veterinarians have no idea what these words mean. So bitch, female dog. Dog is a male dog. Stud, obviously a sire. Dam, obviously a mother. Get, those are the puppies. Maiden, a female who's never been bred. Proven, a male or a female that actually has had reproductive success. Miss, a breeding that didn't result in offspring. Cover, a successful breeding of a male. So he covered the female, means he got her pregnant. AI, artificial insemination. Finished, an animal that's finished a championship at a show. Teaser bitch, you're going to see some examples of that. Those are bitches who are in season that we're using to entice males to ejaculate. Genetic terms, inbred, usually siblings, parents to offspring, cousins. Outcross, unrelated individuals, as unrelated as purebred dogs can get. Linebred, well, they're somewhat related. Limits your gene pool, maximizes the good things and the bad things. Season, the heat cycle of the female. Singleton, one puppy or one kitten litter. Prepotent, that's an animal that really puts their stamp on their puppies. So all of Keegan's puppies are born with gigantic heads. He's prepotent for head structure. Queen, obviously female cat. Tom, male cat. Flagging, tail moving to the side because she's receptive. Outside tie, inside tie, that's the coital lock in dogs, whether it happens appropriately inside the vagina or not appropriately outside of the vagina. An unproven male. He's never been bred. We don't know if he's fertile or not. All right. Why do we want to do artificial insemination? We should just let dogs be dogs. And if they can't breed, don't breed them. Well, I would argue that the knowledge of breeding or how to copulate is not necessarily correlated with nice temperaments, good hips, normal eyes, lack of seizures, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe there are some dogs that are unable to copulate naturally that we are helping with artificial insemination, and we're really helping the breed. I mean, you know, it's not really a big sin if you can't copulate naturally in your dog. So that happens most commonly with young dogs that are inexperienced. They have no idea what they're supposed to do or where they're supposed to do it, and they're trying to breed the female's head or her side, or, you know, it's just inexperience. Incompatibility, you may have a much larger female than the male, and they just anatomically, it's not easy for them to achieve a natural breeding. Or there may be anatomic problems, such as we have created in bulldogs, that it's very difficult for them to achieve a natural breeding. You may have a compromised stud dog, like this little guy here. You know, he's very old and arthritic, and he has no genetic flaws, but he's unable to tie bitches anymore, yet he can still contribute valuable genes to the population, so we can help him out with NAI. Again, compromised semen, we know that there are some things we can do to semen in handling it that improves its motility and longevity under the microscope, and we are assuming the same thing happens in the female. So by adding some semen extender that has lots of glucose and some antibiotics in it and egg yolk, we may enhance the fertility of some older dogs or compromised dog semen. Certainly you have to do artificial insemination if you've processed semen and shipped it across the country, or you're using frozen semen that's come internationally or has been saved from a dog that's no longer with us. And then it can be used finally as a tool in some infertility cases, where you've done everything else, you've done proper ovulation timing, you've bred the female with a known fertile male, and she's still not conceiving, there's a chance that she has a problem with penetration of semen through her cervix, maybe a mucus problem. We're extrapolating this a little bit from the human field. And in some of those cases, by doing intrauterine artificial insemination, we can achieve pregnancy. So there's lots of different reasons why. There's a myth. I know Mother Nature knows best about everything, but I would say that we achieve the same pregnancy litter size rates with properly performed artificial insemination of fresh semen as the natural act does. So we have about a 96% success rate with normal dog, normal female, whether they breed naturally or we do a fresh artificial insemination. All right, there's two parts to this ordeal. One is the semen collection, and then one is the insemination. So we're going to talk about both ends of this. And you should know that as far as the American Kennel Club is concerned, it's perfectly legal and ethically correct for a non-veterinarian to collect semen and do a fresh semen insemination. AKC requires that chilled and frozen semen inseminations be done by a licensed veterinarian. But it's perfectly acceptable by the veterinary field and AKC for technicians to do fresh AIs and fresh semen collections. All right, well, what kind of equipment do you need in your practice to do semen collection? You need to have what we call an AV. So this is an artificial vagina. It's a little latex cone. They are commercially available that we use to collect the male dog with. And these are attached to plastic tubes, some of which are vented and some of which are not vented, for semen collection. You obviously need to have a typical laboratory setup with a centrifuge and a light microscope. It's nice to have a slide warmer. That's what this little thing is. They're not expensive. They are set to maintain those slides at body temperature, and that's very useful when you're evaluating semen motility, because chilled semen doesn't swim very well. So it's nice to have a little slide warmer to work with. Slide covers, cover slips, pipettes, such as this here, for moving semen out of tubes and onto slides, is all equipment you pretty much have in most practices. One thing I will point out, we have recently acquired a sperm cue, and we'll talk a little bit about this when we do semen analysis, but it is an automatic sperm counter. So if you don't have an automatic sperm counter, then you're going to be forced to do sperm counts with a UniPet, click, 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 you know, and that's kind of a drag. But the sperm cues are not terribly expensive. If you're doing a lot of repro and a lot of semen evaluation, you should be able to convince your veterinarian that it's a worthwhile investment. They're about $1,000. So it's a lot less. Click, 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 click. All right, this is very important. Most dogs who walk into a veterinary clinic are anticipating they're going to get hurt. They're going to get a shot, they're going to get an exam, they're going to get an x-ray. Something's going to happen that's scary. The last thing on their mind is that they're going to have sex. Okay? So you need to cultivate this experience for them. Now, if they've never been to your practice before, it's going to be easier. But if they've been in and out of your practice for vaccinations or toenail clippings or dentistries or whatever, that's what they're going to be thinking about when they come into the clinic. One of the most rewarding things for me as a reproductive veterinarian is seeing my male dog clients come charging into the waiting room. They're all happy and excited. Everybody else in the waiting room goes, wow, your dog really likes the vet. Why is that? And some of them have even leaped out of the car window in the parking lot and run to the clinic door. So it's one of the things you can do for your patients that they really enjoy and like coming back for. But many dogs are very inhibited about being at the vets, and you need to cultivate a situation, a climate of the room where you're going to do the collection to get optimal semen collection. We know that you can double the sperm count by simply improving the dog's libido. So by having a female in season there that we're using as a teaser, or using swabs or pheromones, commercially available pheromones, on an object that you're using as a teaser, will increase that sperm count by about 100-fold. So we have a specific room in the clinic that we use for semen collection. And in that room, we have what we call the launch pad. It's a rug. Okay, and it's a rug that we've had females in season sit on. We've had other collections happen on this rug. We only wash it when it gets really rank. When we can smell it, we wash it. But the dogs can smell it very subtly. And so typically, the first reaction of a stud dog that comes into this room is to start smelling the rug. And I'm laughing because I'm thinking, boy, he's smelling a lot of stuff that the client's not realizing he's smelling. But this definitely sets the tone of the room for the dog. It also needs to be a rug that gives the dog good footing. So you can't collect semen easily on linoleum. We had a funny thing happen at the clinic about a month ago. We were collecting a bull mastiff. So this big, gigantic, 160-pound, really excited male dog, he got off the launch pad onto the tile and slipped, and completely flipped over and landed on me, and then just laid there. And I thought, I was in the middle of the collection, and I thought that he'd had a seizure or was having a syncopal episode or something awful had happened, and really what happened is he just slipped. And the technicians who were helping me were horrified because they thought, since I didn't say anything, that I was crushed. But I was just trying to hold onto the tube and not spill the semen on the floor. But anyway, so make sure your launch pad is big enough that with all the dancing around the dog's going to do, he's going to stay on the rug. So the stud dog is ideally anticipating getting into that room. It smells interesting in there. Something good's going to happen. If you have the luxury of having lots of clients that have cycling bitches and you can get a teaser bitch in, that's great. Or if your client has lots of bitches and has one in season that they will bring in for semen collection purposes, that's great. That's not always possible. We do use stuffed dogs, and they work fine. They stay where you put them. You can put secretions from other bitches who are in season on Q-tips and then swap them on these little dogs' tails here. Or you can buy commercially available dog pheromones and use that. It doesn't work as well as the real thing, but it definitely does help. So we definitely collect the males in this room, and then they're in this room afterwards until they've fully recovered. Another important item is you don't want to do a complete physical exam on a dog that you're anticipating you're going to collect, including a rectal and looking in his ears, and you know, because that's definitely going to tell him he's at the vet's. He doesn't want to think about being at the vet's. He wants to think about being at Dr. Ruth's practice, because libido makes a huge impact on the quality of semen that a dog releases. So don't wear your white coats. And where I teach at Davis, when you have three students and a resident and a clinician and the dog and his owners, and those people are all standing over the dog in white coats, his sex drive is gone. So take off the white coats, sit down, be at eye level with the dog, don't be towering over him, don't be dominant over the dog, because you need him to relax and have a good time. So make friends with the dog. And then this is just a joke that we have some sexy dog magazines in the room for the dogs to look at, but that's just to reinforce, you need to set the mood. If you need to do a physical exam, check the dog's prostate, whatever, do it after the collection. All right. It's really hard to teach people how to collect dogs. If you watch someone collecting a dog, you're not going to see the nitty-gritty part of it unless you lie on the floor. It just doesn't happen. If you're looking at the top of the dog or the side of the dog, it's very difficult to see what's really going on. If you're actually collecting the dog, it's pretty easy to figure out what exactly is going on because you're feeling it with your hands. But if you advise someone else, okay, now look at this, they're going to look under there and all they're going to see is your hand and maybe the dog's prepuce and a lot of hair and tail and motion. So it's a very difficult thing to teach without doing. I have a video that I'm going to show you that will illustrate what happens when dogs ejaculate, but still there's no substitute for hands-on experience here, no pun intended. So to set the mood, we have our launch pad, we have our teaser who may or not be alive, maybe a stuffed dog with some pheromone on it. We bring the dog into the room, we let him get acclimated, sniff. I always tell clients, don't yell at him if he pees in here. It's just a normal, you know, male dog response to thinking, oh, I got to mark my territory. It's okay, we can clean the room up afterwards. This is the commercially available O-diestrus from Symbiotics that you can get that's supposed to smell like bitches in season. And we also save swabs from bitches that have been in our practice for ovulation timing. When they are at their peak fertile window and they've come in for their breedings, we take swabs and stick them in the freezer just so we have some nice smelly swabs to use to collect males that are a little bit shy. Well, all of the last 2 weeks I've been trying to get good pictures for you guys of collections, okay? And this is one of our little dogs that comes in for semen freezing on a regular basis. He actually gets so excited when he comes into the clinic, his owner has to take out a toenail trimmer and show it to him just so he doesn't get too much of an erection before he gets into the exam room. And when he saw the doll in there, before I could even get the camera on, he was on the dog, you know, trying to breed it, the little stuffed dog. The easiest way to collect dogs is to let them think they're breeding something and just stick the artificial vagina in between that object and the dog. So you don't have to worry about how do I masturbate this dog and when do I push the prepuce back and what kind of erection is he having. If you can get the dog to think he's breeding either the teaser bitch who's standing there or a substitution for the teaser bitch, that's the easiest way to do the collection. The trick is you need to get the dog's penis extruded from his prepuce before he has a full erection. The reason for this is that if it gets away from you and he starts to ejaculate when he's still inside of his prepuce, it ends up being a very painful thing for him because there's only a limited amount of space inside the prepuce and there's no way to stop that full erection once ejaculation starts. And so he'll end up having a very negative experience. So it's very important that as he's starting to mount the female and thrust that you get that prepuce pushed back behind the bulbus. And this will seem clearer to you when you watch the video. So here we are. He's breeding the stuffed dog. I'm pointing that at my own eye. He's breeding the stuffed dog. We have slid the artificial vagina well over the penis. I'm not touching the penis with my hands. The AV is. The AV is pushed way up above his bulbus, and he's ejaculating to this little plastic tube that's connected tightly. So even though there's a lot of crazy wild thrusting going on, that tube's not going to come disconnected. And now he's done thrusting, and he thinks he's tied the stuffed dog. We're now watching the semen collection come down through the AV into the plastic tube. At this point, there's one of two things you can do. You can either collect the whole ejaculate and centrifuge it to get the part out you want, which is the sperm-rich part, the second fraction, or you can fractionate during the collection. Fractionating during the collection requires an assistant, and what this means is that you are removing the tubes and switching them during the ejaculation. So you're getting the prostatic first fraction in the first tube and then taking it off, putting a new tube on, getting just the sperm-rich fraction, taking that off, putting a new tube on, and getting the third prostatic portion in separate tubes. Why bother with this? If you're processing the semen to be chipped, chilled, or frozen, you need to not have prostatic fluid in the tube because it's toxic to sperm in a test tube. You can take care of that by centrifuging, but that does put the semen through a physical stress, and you will inevitably have some degree of loss of sperm. Some of the little sperm cells will have their heads ripped off as they're going through the centrifuge. So it's best to fractionate if you can. If not, centrifuge then to separate out that sperm-rich fraction from the prostatic fluid fraction. And as you can see here, this is prostatic fluid. It's got a few sperm cells in it, so it's not perfectly clear. This is the sperm-rich fraction. It's very milky, very thick, and typically in a Labrador-sized dog, you would expect about 1 cc of sperm-rich fluid. So clients, when they see us fractionate, often say, wow, that's not very much. It's not quantity that counts. It's quality. So, you know, collecting 20 cc's of sperm-rich fluid with a bunch of prostatic fluid in it does not necessarily mean a good thing. It's better to fractionate and get just a small portion of sperm-rich fluid to work with. Okay, this is the video. Now, this is a video made by Dr. Ed Feldman. Oops, why did that happen? This is a video made by Dr. Ed Feldman. Sorry. At our vet school to try to show people how semen collection is done. So what he's done is he's put a Bernese Mountain Dog who's easy to collect up on a grooming table, and he's not using a teaser and he's not using a dummy teaser. He's just masturbating this dog to get him to ejaculate. And this is a dog we've collected many times, so we know he's predictably going to ejaculate. So what you'll see him do is massage the penis through the prepuce a little bit until he feels the dog starting to get an erection, and then extruding the penis, getting that prepuce pushed back behind the bulbus before the dog really starts thrusting. He does not put the artificial vagina on the dog's penis like you normally would in a collection, because he wants you to see what the penis looks like during ejaculation. So this isn't exactly how you would do it, but this is going to show you what the whole process looks like. And then he's also going to show you how the dog's ejaculating some prostatic fluid, first fraction, and then sperm-rich fluid, second fraction, and then some prostatic fluid again, third fraction. Now, if you're going to do a fresh AI, right, you know, you're taking the semen and you're going to turn around and look at it and put it right into the female, you don't need to worry so much about fractionating. It doesn't matter if you put some prostatic fluid into the bitch with the sperm-rich fraction, if it's an immediate breeding. The damage seems to happen when they sit in a test tube together for a protracted period of time. So for a fresh breeding, it doesn't really matter, but realize that once you have 4 cc's of ejaculate in that test tube, you don't need to sit there any longer, because all the rest of it is just prostatic fluid. Does anybody know why dogs do this? Why they ejaculate, you know, 1 cc of sperm-rich fluid and then 20 cc's of prostatic fluid? It's actually pretty neat. In a natural breeding, when dogs are tied, they ejaculate their sperm-rich fraction, and then they ejaculate a ton of prostatic fluid, and what that does is it forces the sperm-rich fluid into the uterus. So it actually enhances conception in, you know, the real breeding. But in an artificial situation where you're putting semen in a test tube, we have found prostatic fluid, it causes deterioration of the semen motility and eventually will kill it. So you want to get it out of there when you're processing semen for shipping or freezing. Okay, so here's the video. The other funny thing is I just got this video last week, and I'm not sure if there's sound or not. So he may say some things that you're going to find amusing. I've played it on computers that don't have sound. All right, let's see. So here he's massaging the dog's penis through its prepuce gently, seeing that he's starting to get an erection. And at the point before the dog really starts thrusting, you want to try to get the partially erect penis out of that prepuce. So that's what he's doing right there, is getting that prepucial skin behind the bulbus glandis, which is the big round swelling that a dog has during erection. And now he's ejaculating that first fraction. It's mostly prostatic fluid. Normally you'd have the AV already on the dog by now, but just for the purposes of teaching, he's getting it all over his tie instead of in the test tube. Typically dogs, when they're breeding naturally, don't release that sperm-rich fraction until they've achieved a tie and turned around. And then an experienced dog will release that sperm-rich fraction. So oftentimes what you'll see after a period of time, he's going to pull that AV and penis behind the dog's legs, simulating the tie. And he's watching the semen. And as you can see, there are actually 2 fractions. There's that little bit of clear fluid at the very bottom. Then there's a lot of very opaque sperm-rich fluid. And then you're going to see eventually more clear prostatic fluid. That's pointing out the bulbus. That's what causes the lock with the female. That large part of the penis, when it's erect, is what locks inside of the bitch's vulva and prevents her getting away from him during the time the male dog is ejaculating. And here he is pulling the penis behind, and right about now is when an experienced stud dog would say, okay, I think I've got the female tied, I'm going to release my sperm-rich fraction now and force it into her uterus. And again, this AV would normally, in a real collection, be up above the bulbous gland. It's not below it. The AV is on the outside of the tube until you start switching. Then you just tuck it inside the tube and hold on to it, because it's too hard to get it on the outside of the tube with all the fluid that's there. So you can see this is a mixed sample. There's some prostatic fluid in it and sperm-rich fluid. if we were processing the semen to ship it off or freeze it, we would have to centrifuge it. And remember, dogs are going to continue to ejaculate prostatic fluid that's sperm-free for, you know, 15, 20 cc's. Not unusual. Okay. So you have your semen sample that you've managed to get. It should always be analyzed. Whether that means you just go take a look and make sure that it's motile and looks, you know, concentrated and has good motility, or whether you're doing a full semen evaluation, it should always be looked at. And this is an area that my technicians do all of this. They may say, hey, could you come look at the sample? It's a little weird, but I don't do any semen evaluations anymore because they do a better job of it than I can. They do it all the time. They're very comfortable with it. So there are basically three things you want to look at. You want to look at motility, and it's motility of the whole sample, general motility, and then also progressive motility. So if the little guys are shimmering in place but not swimming across the field, that's not progressive motility. It may be motile, they're alive, but they're not effectively swimming across the microscope field. We usually score that as, you know, 85 to 90% motile, of which 80% is progressively motile. And you'll have a system that you become comfortable with for saying slow, moderate, fast speed, poor, fair, good quality. So the little guys that are just jamming across that microscope field in a straight line, zing, that's fast, excellent quality motility. The guys that are kind of, you know, la, 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 going in a couple circles and finally getting across the field, that's fair to poor motility and slow speed. This is subjective. We don't have the fancy machinery in canine reproductive practice that they do with horses and cattle, that automatically you put the sample in a box and it tells you what the velocity is of the motility and what percent and what speed. We have to do it subjectively, but I think with practice you can become very good at doing this. So judge motility. Normal sperm motility in dogs is that it should be, you know, really about greater than 75% motile, most of those being progressively motile sperm cells. Morphology, you'll learn with experience again. We have a little chart by our microscope of what some of the common morphologic defects are, not all of which we can see with light microscopy. There are some defects with the acrosome on the sperm head, for example, the powerhouse of the sperm, that it causes the sperm cell to stick to an egg and actually be able to penetrate that. We can't evaluate that with routine laboratory equipment. That requires immunofluorescent studies or special stains that most people don't do. I don't even do in private practice. But you can look at general morphology in a stained slide. So obviously you're looking at dead sperm that are stuck on the slide. So you take a drop and you make a smear like you would a drop of any other fluid, blood, urine. Air dry it, diff quick stain it. You don't have to have fancy sperm stains, just diff quick stain it, and then do a 100 to 200 cell count like you would a hematology slide of how much percent are normal and what percent are abnormal. And we categorize very simply the abnormalities into head, neck, and tail abnormalities. And probably the most common defect we see are coiled tails. Okay, so sperms with tails that are coiled up like they're in a little membrane. They're not going to be able to swim effectively. They're not going to be able to find the egg. Those, even if they're alive, they're not functional sperm. And it's important to be able to document that in a dog that someone wants to use for breeding, because he may or may not be fertile. Normal dogs should have greater than about 90% normal sperm. Some dogs can be fertile with less than that, but that's usually only because they have a very high sperm count to overcome that morphologic problem. And then a count. And again, counts can be done very simply with a UniPet system, but it's laborious. So investing in a sperm cue is lovely. You simply fill a little tray with a drop of semen, stick it in the machine, push the button, gives you the number. And these have been calibrated and validated for use in the dog. They're great. So this dog has 350 million sperm in that sample that we put into the machine. You have to do a little arithmetic. You know, if you take an aliquot of the sperm and give the sperm count from a mil, if you actually have 10 mils, you may have to multiply by 10 to get your whole sperm count per sample. But this machine is going to tell you how many million sperm per mil. And really, that's it. Well, that's all you need to be able to do really high-quality semen evaluation is look at fresh semen using a warmed slide for motility, make a diff-quick stain slide for morphology and do a 100 or 200 cell count and get a, and do a sperm count. And that way you can say this stud dog has you know, 500 million sperm per ejaculate, of which 400 million had normal morphology and good motility, this dog should be fertile. Should be. You can't say he is until he's gotten dogs pregnant, because there are a lot of biologic factors that we can't look at in the laboratory, but he should be fertile. He looks good on paper. All right. So after you've gotten what you want, which is that sperm-rich fraction, you're going to go off to the lab and look at the semen and process it and get it ready for whatever you're going to do with it, i.e. you're going to inseminate a bitch, or you're going to chill it and ship it somewhere, or you're going to put it through a freeze process. What's happened to the dog? Well, he's back in the room thinking he's tied and ejaculating prostatic fluid, sometimes for 10 or 15 or 20 minutes. So you need to advise the client, this is normal and this is going to last for 5 to 20 minutes. And that's not sperm. That's just clear prostatic fluid. So don't worry about the fact that he's now ejaculating on the floor. Well, how do you keep the dog comfortable? Well, if the AV stays on, I leave it on. I just say, that's fine. It's a mucous membrane that's not usually exposed to the air. And when they don't have an AV on place, they tend to get a little dried out and may be uncomfortable when they're going through detumescence or loss of their erection. It sometimes helps to put a little KY jelly at the top of the bulbous here where the prepuce is turned in itself to make return into the prepuce more comfortable for the stud dog. So if the AV stays on, that's fine. It'll fall off when the dog loses his ejaculate. I've only had one dog, and it was a Labrador, eat the AV. So I came back in the room and I said, where's the AV? And the owner said, I don't know. And I said, you didn't put it in the trash, which is what a lot of owners do. When it falls off, they get up and they put it in the trash. And we reuse these. They're expensive. They're about $8 to $10 a piece, and they can be washed and reused. So we looked in the trash, it wasn't there. We looked in he'd eaten it. So now I do say when I leave the room, it's okay for the AV to stay on him until it falls off. Just don't let him eat it. So we had to then induce emesis and get the AV back from that dog. Okay, now we're going to talk about artificial insemination. Does anybody have any general questions about semen collection? Yes. Okay, good question. The question is, if you're doing a fresh AI, so you're collecting the semen, you're looking at it to make sure it looks viable, and then you're going to put it in a female who's there, do we have to worry about temperature? No. It can be at room temperature, and it should be fine. You don't want it to get shocked. So you don't want it to get cold shocked or heat shocked. But at room temperature, it should be fine for the few moments it's going to take for you to prepare it for insemination. Well, the question is, do I have any tricks for dogs that have terrible libido that are really nervous and shy? Some of the things I've talked about, you know, not doing any veterinary procedures to the dog, having the room have a rug in it that smells like bitches who are in season, having a teaser bitch that someone's holding, or having a stuffed dog that has some pheromone on it helps. Sometimes it just takes two or three visits to get them to realize you're not Dr. Needle today, you're Dr. Ruth. And sometimes two or three times coming back, they finally relax and you can get a collection on them. Sometimes going outside and trying it in an outdoor setting outside of the clinic helps. We know that you can give prostaglandins to dogs 15 minutes before you collect them, and it increases their sperm count, but I don't think they were able to show that it did anything to poor libido. So mostly it's a psychological thing in getting the dog used to the situation and feeling relaxed enough to ejaculate. And really having a female in heat there can make all the difference in the world. So most of the problems you've had, have they been without a teaser? A lot of times if you question people with dogs that are like this about how he's been socialized in terms of being a male dog, you'll learn that they yelled at him if he mounted anything, that he's lived with this female dog all of his life and she's told him no, and it can be quite vicious, no, from a female dog until all of a sudden, okay, now you're supposed to perform. So one common mistake clients make is they either leave dogs together when they want them to breed, and typically the male gets beat up and exhausted before the female's finally ready. I mean, in the natural setting, when you have a female wolf in heat and several male wolves vying for her favors, it's the male who's got the best, who can survive through several days of not eating, not drinking, being beat off, fighting with other male dogs, and still has enough energy to actually breed her when she says, okay, it's time. But in a domestic dog situation, you know, many soft domestic dogs like that Labrador are just going to go, Are you kidding? She bit me in the face the last time I tried that. I'm not going to try to breed her again. So educate your clients to keep the dogs separate. And sometimes if they bring dogs in that I can't get collected, I send them home for a day and I say, completely separate them. Bring them back in separate crates or separate cars. He doesn't get to be in the room with her until I'm in with him and she walks in. And then it's like, wow, maybe he'll do it because he's not quite so frightened. So most of it is not physiologic in the male dog who's young and healthy. Otherwise, it's usually a psychological behavioral problem because of the way that he's been trained. He has been trained not to mount things, not to hump things, you know, both by his owners and by the female dog. The other one thing to mention too is if you have a male who's trying, you know, he's trying to breed a female and he just keeps giving up and getting off, be sure you check the female for strictures because oftentimes they will have a stricture that no one's found, no one's done a good pre-breeding exam on her, and the male is hitting that when he's trying to tie her and it hurts. So that's why he's going, no, don't want to do that. Any other questions on collection? Again, I'm sorry, it's hard to teach other than by hands-on. And if you can, you know, get someone who has a stud dog that's very easy to collect so it's not hard for you to get him excited and practice getting the penis out of the prepuce before he's fully erect, the rest of it pretty much we'll just learn by experience. It's not difficult in most situations. No, you don't have to. But what you'll find is most dogs start stepping like they want to step over your arm and then they seem to relax when you pull the penis back. You don't have to, but it does make it easier to look at the collection than if it's underneath the dog. And that time the bull mastiff fell on me, that's the only reason I was able to hang on and not spill it, because my arm wasn't underneath him. Question is, what about walking the dog after you've collected him to speed up the loss of his erection? I'm not an advocate of that, and the reason is that if you watch a dog that has an erection and he's not in a, you know, he's not tied to a female, they're uncomfortable. They're kind of like, whoa, what is this? And I can't sit down and I can't lay down and I kind of want to lick it, but that hurts. And I don't think it's right to walk them. I think it's forcing them to do something that they wouldn't normally be doing. And I don't think it speeds up the loss of the erection at all. So I lock them in the room. Then if, you know, there's a problem with the semen, the clients are there and I can talk to them about it. I always check the stud dogs before I let them go back out to the car because sometimes they do catch hair or roll in the end of the prepuce when they're going back inside of it and they can actually strangulate the tip of the penis. So I always, either myself or my techs, look and make sure he's fully back in his prepuce. And if they go out for a walk and think he's fine to put him up in the car, you're not going to have the opportunity to do that. Okay. Vaginal AI. We're going to talk about two types of insemination. Vaginal, which is the standard way it's done, and intrauterine. When you're doing a vaginal AI, you're basically putting the semen into the bitch's vagina. And again, we talked about this when you're doing a vaginal cytology. You want to make sure that you put the pipette into the vagina, not into the vestibule, which is this part of the reproductive tract right here. And in order to do that, you need to pass the pipette up over the brim of the pelvis and into the vaginal lumen. The bitch's cervix, which is the top of the vagina, is located right about level with her cranial thigh. So that gives you an idea how far you need to get the pipette in, mid-thigh, in order to have the semen go in the vagina. If you put it into the vestibule, more of it's going to leak out than you want. The other trick is you need to avoid hitting the urethra papilla and the clitoral fossa when you're passing the insemination pipette. It should not be painful for a bitch to have a pipette put in if she's in estrus. If you think about the difference between the size of your pipette and the size of the dog's penis when it's erect, it's a lot smaller. Bitches should tolerate this very well unless they have a lesion or, you know, trauma or a stricture or something that's impeding that. It's not unheard of to accidentally put a pipette into the urethra. So again, you want to remember that you stay dorsal, get over the brim of the pelvis, and then pass the catheter forward into the vaginal lumen. We always do a vaginal smear the days we do our AIs. We want to double check our ovulation timing. We want to make sure that she's still cytologically in estrus and should be close to or in her fertile window. If a client comes in with a dog that they've been trying to breed for 2 weeks and they haven't been able to get it accomplished, so they finally decided they're going to go to the vet and spend money to get help with this thing that should have happened naturally. And they've done no ovulation timing, but you know their bitch has been in season for a while and she's been standing for a while, but now she's kind of getting sick of this whole thing, and she even growled at the stud dog this morning, but we want you to do an AI, doc. You want to do a vaginal smear because that's the only way you're going to be able to tell if she's out of her fertile window. So if she has a smear that looks like this, a lot of potato chips, cornified square edges on the cells, little teeny pycnotic or absent nuclei, fine. You can go ahead and do your AI. Chances are she's in her fertile window. But if she's had the return of the young Cheerio-type parabasal cells, more than 50% of them, she's in diestrous, and she's likely not fertile. And so it's likely a waste of their time and your money, no, their money and your time, to do a breeding then. They may want to do it anyway, but at least you've covered your tail by saying, I think your bitch is too late. You need to start this whole process earlier next time. And then if she doesn't conceive and you've got your vaginal cytology records, you'll say, I told you she was in diestrous. You know, this was a long shot. So always do a smear of the days of the breedings to back up your timing and to confirm that she's still in estrus. Okay, not a lot of fancy equipment for vaginal AI. You need a syringe. And I generally use a 6cc syringe because I'm not usually using more volume than that. Sometimes less than that would be adequate, but a 6cc syringe is a nice size in my hand. We use these insemination pipettes that are readily commercially available. I believe they were initially made to be mare uterine lavage pipettes. You can actually pass them by palpation into a mare's uterus. They work great for dogs. They come in different lengths, but they're all about the same width. They're reusable. You can clean them. They don't need to be sterilized. The vagina is not sterile. And they're beveled at the end, so they're comfortable to pass into the bitch's vagina. So again, make sure you get over, miss the urethra papilla, miss the clitoral fossa, get over the brim of the pelvis and into the vaginal vault before you do the insemination. We used to think that you had to elevate bitches for inseminations to be successful. Somebody did a very nice study looking at the conception and litter size difference between 20-minute elevation, 10-minute elevation, and no elevation, and guess what? There's no difference. So you no longer have to struggle with holding dogs up for 20 minutes or making your clients take up the room for 20 minutes while they're holding their dog's rear ends up in the air because it doesn't have any impact on fertility rate. That is very well ensconced in the breeder internet literature, so you're going to have to explain that the study has been done and this isn't necessary. And I usually tell people, go take your dog for a 5-minute walk and just don't let it pee or sit. And then that gets them out of my hair and gets our room cleared up for the next patient. All right. The other form of insemination that I want to talk to you about is intrauterine insemination. And this is something that has become available to us in about the last 10 years. It's very exciting. Why would we want to do intrauterine insemination? And what's available to us for that? Well, it used to be that we had to do surgery to do intrauterine insemination. We had to either do a laparotomy or laparoscopy to get semen into the uterine lumen because of the anatomy of the bitch's cervix and vagina made it very difficult to access it vaginally. But we now can either do it surgically or transcervically, and transcervically is much more desirable, in my opinion, because it doesn't require anesthesia and invasive surgery. These are the two intrauterine insemination objects that are available to us. First, about 15 to 20 years ago, a Scandinavian setup became available to us that allowed you to palpate the cervix transabdominally, hold it in place with your hand, place a rigid pipette into the cervical os, and then push another rigid catheter through that pipette into the uterus. How easy do you think that was? Really hard. This was a technique that was developed in foxes. Well, you know, foxes are pretty little, pretty easy to feel their cervix. It's not that hard to put a catheter through it. But in the dog, and most of our dogs are much chubbier and chunkier than a fox, it's very difficult. There's a very steep learning curve, and it's not impossible to accidentally perforate the vagina or the uterus with that technique. So I personally never used it. It scared me. But recently, in the last 10 years, we've had a new scope made available to us that is a fiber optic endoscope that we place into the vagina, see the cervix, and then pass a urinary catheter through it. And this is really a lovely technique. Surgical AI was done previously when we felt we had to do intrauterine insemination and we didn't have any of these magic toys to access the cervix. The problem with it is you do have to anesthetize bitches, and I think appropriately people have a lot of objections to anesthetizing dogs and doing surgery on them for something elective like a breeding, okay? We did it, but I always felt a little guilty about how the bitches felt the day after they had their abdomens opened up for an artificial insemination. Obviously, you have to have an operating room, you have to have sterility, you have to have surgeon. Even with analgesics, it is a painful procedure. It's invasive. The potential for anesthetic accidents or surgical accidents is definitely there. You really can only do one breeding ethically. You can't open a bitch up 2 or 3 days in a row and keep doing inseminations. And some people really objected to the ethics of it. The whole reason the transcervical scope was developed in the first place was that veterinarians working with guide dog colonies needed to do semen exchange. We had limited gene pools in our colonies. We knew we had much better success making guide dogs from guide dogs rather than using breeders' dogs to improve the genetics or, you know, improve genetic variability in our colonies. So we wanted to use semen from guiding dogs for the blind in England, here in California. But in order to do that, we had to use frozen semen. In order to have frozen semen work, you have to put it in the uterus. So we could never do that in a guide dog facility where we were not allowed to do elective surgery for something like this because it's unethical. So the scope was developed for the use for guide dog veterinarians, and then it got popular and has become used by general practitioners and specialists in reproduction as well. So this is a picture of a Bernese Mountain Dog at the vet school at the University of Georgia, where I go once a year to teach a course on transcervical insemination, and this is one of their reproductive specialists with his new toy doing an intrauterine insemination. And as you can see, the dog's just standing there. They're usually flagging. They're usually wagging their tails and eating cookies, and they tolerate it very well because the vagina under the influence of estrogen has become very thickened. It's very resistant to any kind of trauma. The scope is made for this use. It's made for use in the standing female dog. And it's actually a very fun technique to do. It's not invasive. The potential for doing any trauma to the vaginal vault or the cervix is minimal when it's done properly. It doesn't require anesthesia. Only in a maniacal dog that won't stand anyway would you need any kind of sedation. And sedation is really not desirable because that usually makes dogs want to lay down. And this scope was made to be used in the standing dog. So in most cases, it's readily performed without any drugs. And it does allow you to do multiple breedings. So you can do 2 or 3 or 4 breedings because you're not putting the dog through anything invasive requiring anesthesia and surgery. So that way you improve your chances of conception by doing breedings spread out over that fertile window. The other nice thing is you can have clients in the room. I mean, I don't like having clients in the room when I'm anesthetizing or doing surgery on dogs because it makes me nervous thinking about them when I should be thinking about the dog. But they can be in the room while I'm doing a TCI. We usually have a monitor, so they're watching it. They're absolutely amazed by what the inside of their dog looks like. They're absolutely amazed by how you found the cervix and put a catheter through it, and they actually get to see that semen that they spent thousands of dollars getting and timing and going into the dog's uterus. And they really feel like that was really a neat thing you did, and I'm willing to pay for it, I'm happy about it, and I'm, you know, it's wonderful for client experience. If you have the right equipment, you can perform this with just the breeder holding the dog, sometimes with one assistant. And the equipment does allow us to do some other techniques, and we'll talk a little bit about that later in the talk, diagnostic reproductive techniques. So it can be used for other things than just insemination. Well, when we first started doing this, we did have some concerns. We worried, you know, this equipment is going to be horrendously expensive and only available in the university settings, and will we really be able to get it into the hands of practitioners? And that is slowly happening. It's slowly happening, and the price is becoming more and more reasonable as more companies carry and make this type of endoscope. How hard is it to learn? Well, I would say it has a moderate learning curve. I tell most veterinarians if you've done 10 of these, you will be good at it. But you have to do about 10 of them to learn the hitches. You know, there's going to be the bitches that have too much fluid in their vagina. There's going to be the bitches whose cervixes are pointed in a funny direction. There's going to be some little tricks to the trade that you'll learn only by doing. So it takes about 10 cases. And what I usually recommend veterinarians do is offer TCI to your clients who are coming in for a vaginal insemination at the same price as a vaginal insemination to give you the chance to practice on some of these bitches. We worried that we might transplant normal bacteria that normally live in the vagina is not sterile, into the uterus and cause problems. But what we've learned is that when dogs breed naturally, that bacteria from the vagina and in the semen normally end up in the uterus. It's a normal event. And the uterus has mechanisms by which it clears bacteria out at the end of estrus and the cervix closes. So we're not doing anything different than what Mother Nature does. And there have actually been very good studies done showing that bitches acquire bacteria from male dogs and they change their normal flora with a breeding, and it has no effect on fertility or litter size. So we don't sterilize this equipment. The vagina is not sterile. We're certainly clean. We certainly clean it between patients, but we've not recognized any problems with introducing bacteria into the uterus during estrus. And again, properly performed, as I said, most dogs don't need sedation or anesthesia. This is not a painful procedure. It looks like it would be, but it's not. Okay, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the equipment. There are really only two companies, in my opinion, that have equipment that's the best for this. They have really nice endoscopic equipment. The first is Storz. What you need minimally is the scope, which is it's a 29-centimeter length urethroscope, and it has what we call a 30-degree viewing angle. So when you're looking through the scope inside the bitch's vagina, you're actually looking at the ceiling of the vagina. You're not looking straight ahead. The reason you need that 30-degree angle is the cervix is in the dorsal part of the vaginal vault. So you need to be able to look up when you get to the cervix to find the cervical opening. This is a very delicate piece of equipment. It's fiber optic. So it lives inside of this sheath that protects it as you're torquing it, trying to get up into the vagina, which also has ports that allow you to put a catheter through it or fluid through it or aspirate stuff back out or biopsy instruments. And then it has an extended port here that gives you a little additional length in longer dogs. If you're doing any kind of endoscopy in your practice, you'll already have a light source, and you just need to make sure you have a light cable that connects your light source with this scope. And a video camera is icing on the cake. The nice thing about the video camera is you don't have to sit there and looking through a little scope with a wrinkled face, and your clients and technicians can look at the screen and see what you're doing. So it's really nice to have a video camera. But if your practice has any kind of endoscopy set up already, the only thing that would need to be purchased is the actual scope and sheath. The other company that has come on board making a nice scope for us for this purpose is Endoscopy Support Services. And what they did is they came to me and they said, well, we know you're doing a lot of TCI and we know you really like the Storz scope. What would you change if you could change something? And I said I'd get a large size because I had difficulty with the original Storz scope with some of our giant dogs, Great Pyrenees, Mastiffs, Newfoundlands. I had to get pretty creative to figure out how to get that scope that was about a centimeter too short all the way to the cervix. So we'd stand them on a ramp and I'd lay on the floor. It wasn't fun. So they said, okay. They made me a longer scope, which is commercially available. It's about 31 centimeter total length, working length, same exact other parts. So it has the fiber optic scope with a 30-degree viewing angle. It has the sheath with ports so you can pass catheters or biopsy instruments, light source, video camera. What are we doing time-wise? Eeks. Okay, so this restraining device is what we use to guide dogs. When with this instrument, a bitch stands here. She's tethered by her collar to this post. This is simply a lumbar support wrap for people that goes around her belly. I didn't need an assistant at guide dogs, which made it great because we did several of these a day. But in the routine setting, you don't have to have this fancy table. Having the video monitor allows you to watch what you're doing tableside, and anybody else who's in the room can watch too. Again, it's just like doing vaginal cytology. We need to get into the vaginal lumen, and this is our cervix. This is a schematic of the dog's cervix, but the cervix actually does seem to come through the dorsal wall of the vagina. So you need to be able to look up to find the cervix and then look for the opening of the cervix, which is not always easy. So these are some images of the dog's vagina. They have this nice little structure called the dorsal median fold, which runs along the roof of the vagina and is your landmark for driving towards the cervix. You get to the end of the dorsal median fold, you'll see that there's this object here we call the false cervix. It's a crack. Below that is the actual cervix. So you have to learn to recognize these little landmarks before you find the cervix. You cannot palpate a bitch's cervix digitally. Now you know it's at the level of the cranial thigh. It's way too deep. And that's why it was difficult for us to access the uterus through the vagina until we had this equipment that allowed us to get way up there and see it. When you finally do find the cervix, it has a very characteristic appearance. When a bitch is in season, it has this little cobblestone rosette appearance. And the opening to the cervix is right where all these little folds come together. So you're looking around for that. Again, place the scope into the vaginal vault the same way you would a cotton tipped applicator for vaginal cytology. Pass it forward using a little bit of non-spermicidal lubrication until you can see the cervix. And then we pass a urinary catheter through the sheath, through the port and sheath of the TCI scope, until we can place it in the cervical os. This is a picture of a catheter, urinary catheter. In most bitches, we use an 8 French catheter right into the cervical opening. That catheter then is passed as far forward as it will go comfortably, and then you do your insemination. The uterine lumen can only hold up to about 2 cc, so this is one of those situations where you can't collect 10 cc of semen from the dog and then put it all into the uterus. You don't want prostatic fluid in that sample because it's going to be sitting in the test tube waiting for you to get the catheter into the uterine lumen. So it's best to either fractionate or centrifuge and have just the spermish fraction with a little bit of semen extender waiting to be put into the female. This is again passing that catheter and then passing the semen in. So you can really see it going into the uterine lumen, and it's very convincing for clients to watch that. Now these are two little movies, and I'll just start both of them going for you to watch, of actual TCIs. So here you can see, well, this is actually at the cervix. This is driving up the vagina looking for the cervix. There's the false cervix. So we're going to go down below that and look for the cervix. This is the polypropylene catheter. There is the cervix hiding down there. Now we're looking for the opening. And you'd think the opening would be right on the end of the cervix. Nope, it's going to be off to one side or down underneath. The beauty of this scope is it's rigid, and you can push the cervix around to find the os. Oh, this is starting to look like there's a little rosette coming together there. Bingo. That's the opening. In goes the catheter. The cervix is on a stalk, so it's mobile. And pretty soon you'll see the insemination happen. There they go. Find the egg. Okay. Can't see? Pull the scope out, clean the lens. Sit the bitch down for 5 minutes if she has a lot of secretions, normal estral secretions in her vaginal vault, and you can't see anything but blood. Very rarely do we try this in any other position but standing, but sometimes that's helpful. It's perfectly reasonable to flush saline into the vaginal vault and aspirate it back out to clear out all those bloody secretions to improve your visibility. If you can't find the cervix, if you just can't find the cervix, pull the scope out. Chances are you might have gone past it and you're up beyond the cervix and the apex of the vagina. Look again. If you can find the cervix but you can't find the opening or it just seems really tight, wait 24 hours because bitches are fertile for about 3 or 4 days. You're going to have a little bit of extra time. And, you know, waiting a day can make all the difference in the world. Maintenance, very simple for both the AV and the TCI scope. Again, we do not sterilize. We clean. So we wash in ivory soap. We rinse with tap water 3 times. Then we rinse with distilled water 3 times and we let everything air dry. For the TCI scope, we do clean the scope, you know, brush out the sheath and clean the scope in dilute chlorhexidine. It's not sterilizing it. It's just simply disinfecting it, cleaning it. And then we rinse it in distilled water and let it air dry. Well, ancillary techniques. We know we'll be able to do sampling of the inside of the uterus, biopsies, cultures, cytology with this equipment. We could never do that before without surgery. It also allows us to do work on some endangered species, and this has been really fun for me. In fact, Thursday we're going to the Denver Zoo, and we're trying to accomplish transcervical insemination in the cheetah. They're really hard, but that's one of my goals, is to be able to do that so we don't have to do surgery to do embryo transplant in the cheetahs. But you can see this is a lion. I know it's kind of hard to tell. Panda, this is our baby panda at the National Zoo, was produced by a transcervical insemination using the Storz scope, so pretty exciting. And the current cheetah project that's going on for in vitro fertilization. Any other questions? Oh, one thing I should say, when I was at Guide Dogs, our technicians did all the TCIs. The only ones I got to do were the ones they couldn't accomplish, so they became very adept at it. And again, it's a totally legal procedure for a technician to do a TCI. It's not surgery. Question? The question is, what would I recommend if a bitch has a stricture? If it's a septate band, those are easy to fix. You simply sedate the bitch and snip it. Pull it caudally with a spay hook and snip it. They're not usually very vascular, and they don't tend to reform. If it's a circumferential stricture like a hymen, those are a disaster to try to fix surgically. They scar. It requires an episiotomy. They're difficult surgery. So in that scenario, I usually recommend that the clients either accept the fact she has a stricture and do artificial insemination in a planned C-section, or take the dog out of the breeding program because she can't be naturally bred and she can't naturally well. We don't know if they're genetic. No one's ever done the work to see if daughters of dogs with strictures tend to have strictures. We don't know. But if it's a really valuable breeding bitch otherwise, I wouldn't hesitate to do AI and an elective C-section on her with a stricture. But I actually do not recommend trying to fix those because they come back, they re-scar. It's just really difficult. Question? Right. You can do any type of semen with transcervical. We recommend it strongly for frozen because it's been shown that you get better conception with intrauterine deposition of frozen semen. We suppose the same thing is true with chilled. For fresh semen, it's probably overkill unless it's an infertile dog or a problem with the bitch's history of fertility. Okay, thank you.